Sean Patrick Maloney, every time I read the Times, I read the papers, I get upset about the state of affairs in the Middle East. We now see a president who apparently is going to offer again some advice and some advisors in Iraq. And I'm wondering whether or not this is the same old, same old.
Well, I'm very worried that we are slouching into a new ground war in the Middle East, and I think it's a terrible mistake. We must not slowly reinvolve ourselves in a massive ground war in Iraq or in Syria. It's why some of us have been sharply critical of the president's strategy or the lack of a strategy in this area. What is really going on in the Middle East is we have created an enormous vacuum in Iraq, and you are seeing a conflict between the Sunni kingdoms and the Shiite powers, and all these little proxy wars are sprouting up everywhere, and they are being funded by either side. So if you look at Yemen, if you look at what's happened in Iraq and in Syria, if you look at Hezbollah, even if you look at the conflict in Egypt between the Muslim Brotherhood and the al-Sisi regime, what is happening is you're seeing a region-wide power struggle between different interests within that region. And we must not get dragged into playing whack-a-mole everywhere there's a proxy contest going on. Now, obviously, we're not going to allow humanitarian disasters, and we're not going to allow progress beyond a certain point that affects our interests. And so the airstrikes are important in a certain regard, and some of the things we're doing throughout the region matter a lot. I don't mean to minimize that. But I just spent a week in Turkey. And if you talk to the people, because Turkey's a critically important ally in all this, and if you spend a couple hours like I did with the Turkish foreign minister and you press him on whether Turkey has the same view of this thing as we do, and whether they're really going to stop foreign fighters, and whether they're really going to stop the oil shipments, whether they really want to stop ISIS as much as we do, and what you find out is that they have very different goals than we do. They want to get rid of Assad, and ISIS is a means to do that in some ways. They are more concerned about the Kurds than they are about foreign fighters. And so until we get our own allies and our own NATO allies on the same page with us, we should not be surprised that we have a strategy that is sputtering along, and that's bad enough unless it is over time dragging us into another conflict in the Middle East. We do not need another war with American ground forces in the Middle East. It would be a terrible tragedy, and I'm working very hard to stop that.
Okay, let's take it from there. How do you work hard to stop it? In other words, what do you do to make sure that it doesn't happen again, which always seems to happen?
Well, I think there are several things that are critically important. First, we have to support our best ally in the region, which is Israel, and we have to, at the same time, deal effectively with the Iranian nuclear program. Either of those things could destabilize this thing to a point where it can never work. I do believe there's an opportunity here for the moderate regimes that still exist and for the Israelis to work to contain the Shiite expansionism, most particularly with an Iranian nuclear bomb, which must be stopped. But also with Iran's adventurism throughout the region. And we need to reestablish a balance between the Shiite and the Sunni powers. And then we can drain the swamp a little bit of all these proxy wars and all these well-funded insurgencies and militant groups. Because when people look at the region, they should not think all these things are just springing up on their own. The truth is a lot of them are supported and funded by interests on one side of that divide or the other. So you must attack the root cause. And to me, that means you must reestablish some sense of how this is going to work in a world where Iraq has been destroyed, and that's where all of our attention ought to be. And everything else is putting out fires. Everything else is using American military forces to keep a lid on this thing, and we cannot do it indefinitely.
So, do you see yourself, therefore, at odds with your own president and your own party?
Very frequently, and that should not be a surprise to anyone. And it's not because I don't respect the president. I do. I certainly respect the presidency, and I respect his role as commander-in-chief. But I believe it is the job of the Congress to say stop when you see someone moving down a road towards a misguided military adventure. And I think the only thing worse than going to war is going to war and not bringing the American people with you. And I am very worried that the president has decided that he wants to be the president that ended the war in Iraq, but he is slowly re-escalating in Iraq, and he's not telling us. And he's not going to the American people and saying, look, the vacuum in Iraq is so serious, here's what's required. And he has sent up an AUMF to the Congress. The Congress should debate it, and we should figure out whether or not we as a country want to do this or not. I think Congress has to step up, and where I will give the president credit is the president has come to the Congress and said, "Give me an authorization on the use of military force." Now, I think his AUMF has a lot of problems with it, but Congress, frankly, the ball is in our court, and the Republican leadership should take this up. We should have a debate on it.
You know, there's this whole idea of the Pacific Rim, the trade agreement. Many Democrats, again, are giving their own president short shrift on this, Bernie Sanders and so many others. So I wonder where you are.
Well, you know, I voted no on fast track, and I voted no because I think we have had 30 years of these things, and it is very hard to argue to people in Newburgh or Poughkeepsie or the Middletown or in Port Jervis that taking all the manufacturing out of America has helped anybody. I mean, the fact is there's no reason we can't have free trade agreements, and I don't need a lecture about how free trade creates wealth. I know it does. I didn't miss macroeconomics course in college. The problem is you got to ask who it's creating wealth for and where. And for 30 years, we've seen working and middle-class Americans struggle with higher costs for everything from college to health care to their local taxes, and yet their wages are stagnating. We have not seen American manufacturing replaced with anything. And so to just keep doing these trade deals without having a robust infrastructure program for the United States, without having a real R&D program for the United States, without saying, here are the industries where we're gonna compete again and win, I think is a real problem. And so my problem with trade right now is that it doesn't seem to have anything for American workers. It doesn't seem to have anything for our communities. I know it might be good foreign policy. I know it might be important in Asia. There's lots of good arguments for it. I'm not unmindful of that. And I think growing exports certainly has a very important role to play as part of an overall strategy. But I'm more interested in the overall strategy. And that's why I'm on the Transportation and Infrastructure Committee. That's why I think we have to grow. We have to grow our own industries. We have to make things in America again. And we can't kind of leave that to some other day and get around to it, you know, maybe never. We need to do it now, and I would like to see infrastructure combined with trade, and then we can have a real conversation about what's in it for us and why it's also important as foreign policy and all the other arguments the president's making. So that's where I am.
When you take a position contrary to that of the president, do you hear from the White House?
Sometimes I do, sometimes I don't. I mean, this administration is much less interactive with members of Congress than ones in the past. I think that's been well reported. There's truth to that. I think they showed up real late and with some half-baked arguments, and they don't have a lot of good relationships up here, and they're paying a price for it. But the fact of the matter is most of us don't let that get in the way. Most of us do what we think is right, and when we agree with the president, we'll support him. But I do think the problem the administration has right now is that they're, you know, this is all hat and no cattle. There is no real substance in here for communities like the ones I represent. I mean, I represent a specific part of the world that has had a specific experience with 30 years of policies like this, and go talk to a 53-year-old, you know, former factory worker in Port Jervis or Middletown, and ask them how trade assistance, you know, retraining is going for them. And the point is, they don't want a welfare program. They don't want some good foreign policy program. They want something that rebuilds their main streets again, and that gives guys, you know, walking down Liberty Street in Newburgh an opportunity to go get a job with some decent benefits and support a family. And maybe be able to afford college for their kids, and maybe be able to look forward to a retirement where they can have some security and some decent health care. And none of that is in this argument the president is making. So my test is why? I'm not saying no, I'm saying why. I'm saying, why does it help middle class families like the one I grew up in? How does it help us in Hudson Valley? And when I see that, I'll get interested. And that's what I'm working for in transportation infrastructure. That's what I'm working for on some of these things, like bringing down the cost of college and helping people get training, you know, for the industries of the future, and good stem cell education for our kids, because we do have to evolve, and we have to change, and we have to grow, and exports are part of that, and leading the world is part of that. But we can't leave out the American worker and the American middle class family, because that's what we've done for 30 years. Well, well-wired lobbyists and corporations have had what's important to them get taken care of, while the rest of us are still waiting for the solutions to help communities like the ones I represent.
Sean Patrick Maloney, that's it for this conversation, but we'll be back real soon again, and we can talk about a whole bunch of other stuff, okay?
Thank you, sir.